Hi everyone, welcome back to Shut Up and Dribble. Happy New Year to everyone. So I want to bring back an old and OG guest, Matt, here, now that he's, you know, gone through a semester of law school and has probably just a couple of regrets, perhaps, of all the life choices he's made. So yeah, I just wanted to bring in Matt to talk some NBA news and to ring in the new year. How are you doing, Matt?
Doing great, Jeff. Glad to be here. As you said, one semester down of law school, definitely having some regrets. By the way, everyone, don't go to law school. But I'm happy to discuss just NBA news. Like, what's been going on around the league, Jeff? Honestly, I haven't been paying that much attention to it over the past semester because law school has been so all-consuming. But I was listening to the Low Post yesterday. They were talking about just how weird this season has been. I don't know if you would agree, but just with COVID and the way that all the different sort of teams have had people out, it just seems like this season hasn't been that great for players or for the fans. What do you think the biggest stories are? Well, first of all, would you agree with that? And then secondly, you know, what do you think the biggest stories are of the season thus far?
I think that the COVID is the biggest story because unlike the previous season where they had this built-in buffer, and they had this, they built something in towards the end where they could redo postponed games. Right now, they are postponing games, but there's not even like that. I think they're really trying hard not to postpone games by allowing these hardship exemptions in and just pulling like new names out of the hat like every week. So I think the NBA just was not prepared for this, and there wasn't like a structure or a cushion built in there to allow NBA teams to kind of, you know, refigure out what's going on. So it seems like everyone's just doing everything on the fly. And that's created a situation basically in December where it's hard to gauge how good teams are. And it's hard to get a sense of who's kind of at the top or who could be rising because of all these random players that are coming in. So I think that's made like evaluation and honestly the game just harder to watch because people aren't there to see kind of like this random like 10-day player, but they are there to see kind of the stars.
I mean, given that, what do you think, or how do you think the standings are, or how representative do you think the standings are of the team's actual strength? Let's start with the East. Like, do you think that there are certain teams that are lower than they should be or higher than they should be based on, you know, these sort of inherent substitutions based on COVID?
Yeah, I think there are probably a couple of teams seem a bit too high right now. I think, the Bulls, I think are, you know, I guess I'm still just not a big believer in the Bulls and how they'll play. So that might not be, because another thing is that COVID's kind of like hit everyone pretty hard. So it's almost a fair thing in that sense. And I guess to be fair, like looking at the standings, we have the Bulls 1, Nets 2, Bucks 3, Heat 4, Caps 5, 76ers 6, Hornets 7, and the Wizards 8. I can't pick out a team there that's been like, been the recipient of COVID, who has benefited more than others, because everyone's been hit kind of hard. So I guess I look at it and say like, I feel like the Cavs are probably a bit too high, Hornets and Wizards are probably too high, and I see the Celtics at 9 and Hawks at 12. I feel like they'll end up getting a bit higher up there after like they have some like players like healthier there. So yeah, I think mainly it's just that like I see these standings, I just don't have a good sense of who's a good team just despite like what the standings show. And I feel like now is kind of like the time where you look at it and be like, okay, like I trust it. It's been 20, 30 games, so I trust these teams are the good teams, where I think I still don't trust necessarily the Cavs, the Hornets, or the Wizards to be there at the end of the season.
Interesting. Who do you think's going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals or Western Conference Finals? I mean, we're talking about the East right now, but, you know, I mean, I guess while we're still on the East, do you think, like, who do you think is going to end up making it out or just in the final round there?
I think that's still tough. For me, it's still down to the Nets or the Bucks But the Nets, it's going to be...
Not the Heat.
You know, Kyrie Irving is working. The Heat? I still don't think... I am not...
I think the Heat's a sleeper. They have so much depth, though. I mean, we got Omer Yurtseven balling out Hoya Saxa.
Hoya Saxa.
But...
Yeah.
You don't think that the Heat have it.
I don't think... Particularly offensively, I think it will be... I think it will be tough because they don't really have... Beyond their top six guys, they don't really have anyone else. Even though like Yurtseven has been playing well, I think he's the kind of player.
Playoffs, and yeah. He's too young. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's the type of player where, you know, grabs a lot of points and rebounds and plays well with the rim. He's like a smart player too. Kind of like that kind of player. I think can rack up stats very, very easily in the league. Kind of like a pick and roll man. Kind of person, so I just don't necessarily trust their offense enough. Right, I think it's, you know, with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, it doesn't seem like they have enough. I don't think they have enough shooting, and especially if they have PJ Tucker starting for them, I don't. That's kind of you have two and a half non-shooters out there, and I think the Heat make it work with kind of. The smart like cutting and screening action with Bam and like Duncan Robinson and Kyle Lowry there, so I think they could definitely make it out there. But I think if the Nets can get Kyrie Irving back, then I think even though assuming everything stays the same in New York, he would only be allowed to play three games in the playoff series. Assuming that things are looking towards Kyrie playing again, I think I would have the Nets there making it out of the East.
Okay, moving on to the 76ers. I mean, you know, I think this season everyone really thought they would do very well. I remember over the summer a lot of people were sort of selecting them as some the more hype or one of the contenders to really make it out of the East. It doesn't seem like they've been really doing that well. I mean, I know Joel Embiid's been out for a really long time and they just got him back, but how do you feel about the 76ers? And what's your take on the Ben Simmons situation?
Yeah, Embiid's been out for a while, and I think that clearly like hurts some. And the fact that they've been able to stick around 19 and 16, I think probably shows that they need Ben Simmons a little bit more than they kind of showed before. And I think that was actually a surprise to me, because I thought that they would, you know, still stick around like pretty well above 500 without Ben Simmons. And it was a bit touch and go for them for the past two weeks or so. But, I mean, I think it's
kind
of...
I mean, they beat the Nets, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On their home court,
right.
Too.
Yeah, Embiid and Durant kind of talked right. A little bit on that game. Yeah, yeah. So, I think it's... The Simmons situation is tough. And it's just been so quiet now with trade talks and everything. I think a lot... That's because teams are just trying to put together a team every night. So they're just so focused on that they haven't been necessarily talking about trades.
Do you think there's like a strategic thing that Morey's trying to like suppress the media chatter about Simmons to kind of like, in some ways, sort of like take the spotlight off him so that like there's not so much of this sort of like rumor mill going on that can kind of interfere with deals or whatnot? Do you think there's any of that going on? Or do you think that like it's just... You know, there actually isn't any movement going on around about Simmons, which I also don't think is the case. I think there's a lot of movement going on behind the scenes.
There probably is a lot of like talk. There probably is like some angling and everything about that. I think it's interesting to see what will happen with Portland and how they decide to move forward with everything, because they haven't been playing very well.
And Dame, you know, I mean, like you think a Dame Simmons type of trade might work? I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Dame's more of a traditional point guard. Philly would, I think, benefit from that. You know, he's in his prime right now, and maybe, what, ship Simmons off there to Portland for Dame? I think their contracts are kind of similar, right? Or maybe you'd throw in another one or two salary fillers there. But you think that's a pretty likely scenario?
I think that Portland... That makes a lot of sense, and I think that's a pretty good return for Damian Lillard. I think that's a decent return for Damian Lillard. I think a big thing is whether Boston would want to get into that, and offer up Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, let's talk. That was going to be our next question is about Boston, because the Celtics have just underperformed. I mean, I think that's one of the stories of this season outside of COVID is just, you know, Boston, I think for the past few years, like, we've always seen them as just a playoff contender. You know, this season is really, you're starting to see the nosedive. And then, you know, you have some of these like murmurs of sort of the inter-team sort of dissent going on. So I don't know, what's your take on the Celtics? I do think they're one of the biggest stories of the season thus far.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with that. Just they've all underwhelmed, and they just, with Brown and Tatum, they don't really have anyone to organize the offense for them. They don't really have like a traditional kind of like point guard who could do that. And I think that's probably their biggest need to do it. But I also don't think they should look to trade Jaylen Brown, or who is probably the person they would trade instead of Tatum, because, you know, they're both young players. They have a lot of room to grow. I think with the first couple of seasons where they enjoyed a lot of success, that's been with a lot of complementary players like Kyrie. You had Gordon Hayward for a while. You had Kemba Walker there. And I think you had these kind of like other players who could act kind of like as glue guys, or at least can like run an offense there. And
some solid role players.
Yeah. And then Tatum and Brown aren't that kind of players. They're just mainly like score first players, and they don't really they can't really like play make as much. And that could just take time for that to come in, because if you really think about it, they haven't been kind of like the focal point of the offense just like the past like two years or something. So Tatum didn't necessarily have like a huge like playmaking role, because, you know, there was Kemba Walker there, and even before that there was like Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. So that could just take time to come in. And I think that if, for example, they decide to move Jaylen Brown for Damian Lillard, I wouldn't call that a championship contender, because, you know, Damian Lillard's probably like the 9th or 10th best player in the NBA, kind of like around there, and maybe even lower now after, you know, underperforming this year. And Jason Tatum is probably somewhere between 10 and 15, and I don't think that gets you there.
You put Jason Tatum 10-15. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you said Jaylen Brown 10. Yeah. I was like, no, I don't know if that's true. sorry, Jaylen Brown, but you're just not up there.
So I don't think that's going to – I think probably another case is to maybe move like Marcus Smart or in a couple other pieces to get a better like offensive player. And I actually think Fred VanVleet would be really good on the team if they were able to trade like Smart for VanVleet, because, you know, VanVleet's not necessarily kind of the traditional point guard. And so you don't want him to run your whole offense, but, I mean, you can definitely – he can be more of like a driving kick kind of guy. You know, he defends well. Right. He's been able to. I think he would be a great fit on Boston if Toronto wants to like move on from him. And they might with like the right picks. And, you know, Toronto's kind of looking to rebuild now anyway. So
in the state that the Celtics are in right now, do you think they're playoff contenders?
Maybe not. I think they're probably. Coming in, I thought they would be 4, 5, 6, and it looks like they might even just be a play-in team. But I also kind of think that like the Charlotte and the Wizards, they're a play-in team, right now. I just don't really necessarily believe in that. I think the Cavs will probably also, you know, slow down a little bit there. So I do think they are a lower tier like playoff team now. Maybe in that 6, 7, 8 range, instead of kind of like the 4, 5. Yeah, I don't think they'll be competing for home court advantage unless they make a move, like to get like Fred VanVleet or something.
You think there are? What do you think are the most likely trades that are going to happen before the deadline occurs? You know, the Pacers seem to be sellers, looking to break up their duo, right? I think there's been a lot of rumors around
Sabonis and Turner. Miles Turner.
Yeah. Right. And then also, yeah, I mean, we're talking about sort of Portland. I don't know, any other sort of teams there or trades that you think are willing to, or not willing, but are likely to happen?
I think that this year is going to be the year that Indiana finally makes a move. and decides to move either Sabonis or Turner. I think it's every sign points to Turner being moved instead of Sabonis, because I think, which I disagree with, I think that Turner's maybe not a better player than Sabonis, but definitely a more impactful, a more useful player for his position than Sabonis is. Because I think for as a center, the most important thing you can do is defend. And I don't think Sabonis can be the focal point of a defense. So I think...
Yeah, Miles Turner's a lot better than defender.
So I think Indiana finally makes a move there. I think that New York probably tries to make a move to get better offensively. I think that Detroit probably moves Jeremy Grant in some sort of deal once he's healthy. I think he's going to be a big piece on the market, because, you know, Detroit's a rebuilding team. They don't really need Jeremy Grant. And I think some of the kind of like the ancillary pieces on Portland, kind of like Robert Covington, I think he'll be on the market. I think, you know, the Blazers aren't even necessarily starting him anymore. So they started Larry Nance for a while. In the summary, I think that's Portland, Indiana, Detroit, and the Knicks are probably most likely to make a move.
Okay, moving on to the Western Conference here. What do you think the biggest story is coming out of the West? Like Grizzlies and just sort of how they've been performing, how crappy the Lakers have been performing. Like, what do you think are sort of the big stories here? I mean, just regarding the Lakers.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people still think that, like, Russell Westbrook is a star. Like, Russell Westbrook is garbage, and he's been garbage, I think, for the past 2 years. Like, I don't understand why people. Right. I think he's such a selfish player. It's funny when you pair him up against a guy like LeBron, who's such, you know, a great team player. I mean, maybe that was sort of the thinking behind it. It was like, well, you know, putting this guy with LeBron, like, he can bring out the best in somebody, you know, in other players. But I don't understand why everyone was like, there was so much hype around the Lakers earlier this year. They're not a good team with Russ. But yeah, any thoughts about the West? I mean, obviously the Warriors are back again. Love the Warriors, love the Dubs. Do you think they're going to be looking to make any sort of pieces to really sort of solidify their strength in the postseason, or do you really think that they're just standing put?
I think they should. Whether or not they will is going to be a different question.
What do you think they're lacking?
So a lot of it will depend on how Klay Thompson looks when he comes back. But I think that they could probably use another kind of like wing scorer type of player. So someone who can play like the four when they go to their Draymond Green at five. Like Otto Porter, Nemanja Bjelica, I guess even Jordan Poole can play the two. Because I think the final lineup that they're hoping to put out is probably Steph, Draymond, Wiggins, Klay, and then one of Poole, Bjelica, Otto Porter. I think that's probably going to be their most potent offensive lineup.
If Klay is still good, though,
yeah.
I mean, that's a big if.
Mm-hmm. If I were them, I would be trying to target another wing. Kind of like, I really think they should try to get Harrison Barnes back on the team, because I think he's really improved this year. And, you know, he knows the system. Like, he knows how to play with the Warriors, and, you know, he would probably play to four. And then you would have, you know, you have that, like, switching lineup again. It would be death lineup, basically, and without Iguodala. And I think that would be a really potent move to make. I think it would be tough to move to get, because they would have to move Kevon Looney, as salary, and then you would just be down like a center, you know, and in your rotation. That's a tough thing to do, because then you kind of have to trust some Quan Toscano-Anderson to play backup center. But I mean, that's what I would do. Another thing to do is get another center to play with. So that's where Miles Turner comes in. He could be someone that would be really great, because he would fit offensively and defensively as with the Warriors. He could space the floor. He could be another rim protector behind Draymond. I think if you have those two as your defensive core, then that's such a powerful defensive front. So I definitely think that the Warriors should make a move. And it's going to require moving under like Wiseman or Kuminga or Moody, and maybe a couple of picks. But I think that, you know, Steph is 34. You know, Klay's coming back from two major injuries. Like, Draymond's not getting any younger. And now you have to kind of push your chips all in now to get an O-ring.
Mm. So sorry, you said Steph at the one.
Yeah.
Who at the two?
It would probably be it depends on what you need, because I see it'd be Steph at the one, Klay probably plays the three, Wiggins at the four, Draymond at the five, and then I guess you could put Poole at two if you want.
So it's like pretty much recreating the 2015 like Warriors squad with Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, it's essentially true, right? Yeah, you would put
some bringing Harrison Barnes. Yeah.
Yeah, and if you get Harrison Barnes, you just recreate the squad with.
There you go. Yeah. It's like you know, if it ain't broke, why fix it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Who do you think is really going to make it out of the West this season? Warriors? Do you think? I mean. Denver. I mean, Denver's not been doing too hot.
Denver has not. They've been able to stick afloat with the Jazz.
Oh, the Suns.
Yeah, the Jazz and the Suns.
You know, everyone talks about the Jazz. I just don't see them. They're like, I feel like they're like the perpetual like make it to the second round and then kind of sputter out team. You know, I don't trust the Jazz making it out. I'd love to see it because I think they're a really really well built team. I think they're well coached. I'm really big fan of, just personal fan of Mitchell, but I don't see them making it out, and I don't trust them to make it out either.
It's tough. All the numbers point to them being a really great team, but I also see that if they were going to make it, it would have been last year, right? Like the path was just laid out for them. Kawhi Leonard goes down. They should have been able to beat the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, but they couldn't. And then the Suns team, which is a great team, but they should have been. I think the Jazz would have been favored to beat the Suns in that round. And yeah, it does seem like that was kind of last year was kind of it. And I think even this year, the Suns are probably a bit better than they were last year. The Warriors are definitely clear. That's the Warriors have always. Really made mincemeat out of teams like the Jazz, who kind of like run a heavy drop system with Gobert and like really get torn up by the Warriors in a matchup like that. Yeah, but I think the numbers are there. I think they have the best offense in the league. I would sometimes like a loss like that, in a second round that's really bad, helps galvanize you next year. I know I'm very much like a more like by like the numbers guy, and I don't really trust necessarily the basketball feelings like that. But it could. Hey, I mean, the Bucks kind of in a similar situation. They really screwed up the year before by losing the Heat in five, but then came back next year and they, with a little luck, they figured it out and they won the chip. So
it's the anger. It's the revenge.
Yeah,
the revenge round.
Yeah. And I think a couple of their personnel, I can't believe I'm saying this too, but having like Rudy Gay there gives you another kind of like forward size player that you could.
He's been doing really well with them with their system, right? Like he's been really slotted in quite well with their team.
Yeah, and I think definitely that adds like another wrinkle that maybe you put a couple percentage points on the Jazz's side. So
I like everything that you're saying there, Jeff. Why don't we, I guess, move on to sort of the next topic we're gonna talk about today?
Yeah, so I think this year, even beyond the NBA, one of the biggest things that people talked about were NFTs. They're basically electronic GIFs that you pay for, is my understanding of it, and or PNGs that you pay for, and they're on the blockchain. And I think 2021 is really the year where they really exploded. And crypto in general this year has really exploded in what I would say is like mainstream kind of like media and thought. So for example, earlier this year, Top Shot, the NBA NFT kind of like experiment opened up this year and they started selling NFTs. And those have really blown up throughout this year. And I think people started trying to collect all these things, hoping they would get a value. I think the most expensive card that I think was sold for like $70,000. And even, the Lakers, they announced that the stadium is going to be, well, not the Lakers, the people who run the the stadium, the name is going to be changed from Staples Center to Crypto.com Arena. And
Crypto.com Arena.
Yeah, Crypto.com Arena. It really rolls off the tongue.
Isn't the Miami Stadium also named after some sort of crypto company?
No, I don't think so. I think it's still American Airlines.
I know that Miami really is trying to become the next crypto hub, but sorry, continue.
Yeah, no. Yeah, so and there's that, and then also like Coinbase has, I think it's a crypto sponsor for the NBA.
Yeah. I saw that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, there's just so much crypto influence now.
Yeah.
And corporate sponsorship that's really just exploding.
So I'm not, I wanted to talk to you, Matt, because I know you've written a bit about crypto and are probably more knowledgeable about it than me, because all I do is just buy crypto and just pray. I just buy some doggy coins and hope everything goes for the best.
Right.
Yeah, and I buy like a Zion Williams NFT and hope that he starts going on some Weight Watchers or some Nutrisystem and gets on the floor. Because every minute he's on the floor, the value of that NFT drops. So yeah, the question here is, how is the NBA's kind of acceptance of crypto kind of a sign that like, oh, it's here to stay and it's not some sort of like, Reddit thing anymore. It's actually like a real... it's a real thing.
Offers some
now.
Legitimacy. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's okay. Well, what can I say about crypto and NFTs? Definitely, I think that this trend kind of just exploded since the start of the pandemic. It's funny. I was thinking when you said earlier that it's on the blockchain. It's like the 2021 or version of like what people used to say back in like 2016, right? Like it's on the cloud, it's like it's on the blockchain, like it's really, I think, pervaded and just infiltrated popular culture. And I think, in a lot of ways, I do believe that having NFTs or just sort of crypto sponsorship, I think anything when it reaches corporate sponsorship in a sports game, like something has arrived. I don't know, that's kind of my general sort of thoughts about just whether or not crypto has just finally become like legitimized in popular culture. I think, and it really is amazing, I think, just how fast crypto has sort of become so cemented within popular culture now. I'm a big YouTube watch guy, and there's just so many videos. I get so many like ads on YouTube of people like, oh, this is how you make become a crypto millionaire, or this is how you can get really rich with crypto, blah blah blah. And I do think that the pandemic was a big catalyst for this, but I guess I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here. I want to sort of like back up and just sort of discuss like what crypto is or what NFTs are for all of you out there that might not be familiar. People talk about this sort of like blockchain. They kind of talk about all this like weird stuff, or really sort of esoteric and complicated terms. What are some of the other ones? Blockchain. Oh, it's on the blockchain. Or it's non-fungible. I hear that one a lot. Fundamentally, Sparks Notes guide to just anything crypto is that what it is that it's a product. It's what they call sort of a distributed ledger. Okay. Which basically means that all it is just a digital sort of logbook of transactions. That's all a coin, like any crypto coin or any sort of crypto product is. It's just a bunch of recorded transactions. And what I think is so interesting, and this is like, I think, really sort of straying far from our sort of NBA thing here, but just bear with me.
Yeah, necessary background. Yeah,
money essentially is just a ledger. That's really all it is. Or electronic money. That's all it is. And so, basically, a blockchain is just a chain of different transactions that are put into a ledger. And that ledger is sort of just traceable, and you can know every sort of transaction that's occurred, where this sort of this coin or this product has sort of changed hands, in sort of a chain of all the transactions that this product has sort of changed hands in. Does that make sense? Sorry, I don't know if I'm explaining it super well.
I have like a
it's just a ledger. That's really all it is. That's what the blockchain is. Whenever people talk about the blockchain, that's all it is. It's just a ledger of different transactions. So that's what the blockchain is. And you're thinking, okay, now how do you apply this, or how does this sort of relate to TopShot or you know, any of these sort of crypto networks or schemes that the NBA is pushing? And I guess to sort of describe or to understand that, we just have to kind of get into sort of a subset of crypto, which are NFTs. NFTs stand for non-fungible token. That's a lot of complex language that basically means it's just a blockchain or sort of this record of transactions applied to an ownership certificate of some sort of digital good or digital creative good. So this can apply to art. This can apply to a tweet. This can apply to, in the NBA's case or TopShot's case, a training card. It's basically just like an ownership certificate of a training card. So I guess when people used to trade, or I guess still do, trade like actual physical trading cards, it would be more valuable if you could show some sort of certificate of authenticity along with the physical card. And basically an NFT is like that certificate of authenticity. That's really all it is, but it's digitalized, and it has a record of all the different like transactions that this card has changed hands through. It's just a tradable digital certificate. Now, the thing with sort of the money aspect that comes in is that I guess nowadays people consider owning that certificate really valuable. And I don't know, we can get into sort of the deeper economics of this, and I don't mean to bore people if this is not what you signed up for, but fundamentally, you know, for things to have value, they need to possess some sort of, there needs to be some sort of use to it, or you know, there needs to be something, I mean, traditionally, there needs to be something that allows it to have value. It needs to be in demand for some reason. And from my perspective, I don't know where a lot of that value is coming from nowadays, which is why I think a lot of these NFT crypto products, while they may be commanding really, you know, elevated prices in the market, I do think that they are very risky if you're going to purchase them. From the fact that there isn't a lot of value behind it that allows people to put a stable price to it. You know, in some ways, I see a lot of these crypto schemes as basically just ways to create sort of gambling market or create gambling sort of games around a certain product. That's really how I think a lot of them are structured. And I don't know, I'm not a financial advisor, and I don't purport to dispense any financial advice here, but I am very skeptical of a lot of these crypto things. And if you are someone that is a more risk-averse investor or person that wants to sort of, you know, keep your money, I wouldn't engage in purchasing too many of these NFTs or crypto products.
So you're telling me I shouldn't spend $1,000 on a Trae Young layup for?
Well, you know, I think, Jeff, like, it's like pick your poison, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're just going to go over to Vegas and hit the baccarat table, uh-huh. you know, or a roulette table and put, I don't know how much you bought that for, maybe like $3,000 on red. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, I can't stop you from doing that, right? I would say, though, if you do go to Vegas, there are other sort of ancillary benefits to that, yeah. whereas buying an NFT, you might not get that, right? At least you get the Vegas experience. But, you know, what I think is really interesting nowadays, Jeff, is just how much, you know, there was that, I think it was back in 2017, 2018, there was that landmark case you know, here's sort of my law schoolness sort of coming in, but where it sort of overturned sports betting, right?
Yeah.
And now you're seeing such a huge increase in sports betting, in these types of crypto products, which I think is another form of gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seems like the league, or the leagues, not just the NBA, but all leagues, all sports leagues, have really tried to embrace this. And I do also think that the pandemic has a lot to do with it. I think that sports betting and NFTs and all this sort of crypto speculation, all these sort of like app games or whatever, wouldn't be as big if it weren't for the fact that people were locked up for a year and had nothing better to do except be on their phones. But I just think it's really interesting how we are pushing more of these sort of gambling-like activities onto susceptible people. And I don't know if that's really that healthy.
Yeah.
Call me old-fashioned. As we know, you know, I'm an old-school type of guy. But I just don't know if it's really that healthy. And I think that we're creating a whole generation of you know, teenager, or not I mean, teenager, because I guess you have to be, these products are age-restricted, but still. I think we're creating a whole generation of kids or people that are going to be hooked on gambling in ways that really just are not that, you know, or you know, yeah, just are hooked on gambling. And I think that's going to create a lot of sort of social, negative social effects.
No, I definitely see that. And I think as a fan of the, like, I realize I have two personas. There's kind of like the fan persona, and there's probably like the more socially responsible persona that's outside of them, because I see in like the NBA, I'm just like, oh yeah, like I know fantasy basketball, I know like daily fantasy, I know like even with like NFTs, like, oh, I know who's gonna be like the next big player. And so I can, you know, kind of get, I can make an educated guess on that and to decide like how it's gonna go. And that's why I'm like, yeah, they should, you know, open up gambling, open that up for every state to do it. You know, it could be another source of like state revenue for governments, and they could turn that money into something that's helpful. And then there's the other side of it that's like, oh yeah, there's like a lot of these crypto schemes on YouTube, and like YouTubers like will peddle these things and, you know, take money from very susceptible people. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't think we should do that. But then I'm like, oh, like the NBA sports is fine. That's okay. But yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, in some ways, like what you're kind of describing isn't that much different than, you know, buying stocks, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you talk about sort of making an educated guess or an educated bet. In a lot of ways, that's what sort of stock investing or equity investing really is, right? I mean, you have all this public information, just in the way that there's all this, you know, data about NBA players, sports players out there. There's a lot of, you know, freely accessible data about companies and markets, and you're allowed to buy, you know, these products that can increase in value or you know, in a lot of ways, I think a lot of modern finance is just like complex gambling. And so I think that's sort of an interesting angle as well. It's like, you know, should we outlaw certain types of you know, gambling-esque activities when other forms that are very similar are legal? And I think that's a really good question.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back to that case, because I think it was like a federalism argument where the national law turned out to be illegal, and then it's actually within the state's rights to regulate gambling. So I remember when that came out, I did take a look at that, and I was just like, oh yeah, like DraftKings is gonna be big or something like that, you know, in every state. I guess, Kwangwoo, do you think this, now that, is it a good thing that crypto is more popularized now, that maybe more people now hear of it? Because it could be something where it's still fairly early, I think, crypto, and you could still, quote unquote, jump, get on the bandwagon with it. Do you think it's like a good way for maybe younger people who, you know, who may get interested in sports and then they want to learn more about crypto to get to learn more about like finance and personal finance?
Absolutely not.
No.
I think that crypto is just a, well, you know, crypto is a very big space right now.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Uh-huh.
You know, it encompasses things like NFTs and NBA Top Shot. Also encompasses other types of of schemes and products. I don't think that we should paint all crypto as terrible, because I don't think all of it is. But I mean, as just sort of like NBA Top Shot or these types of crypto trading card games as schemes to maybe sort of like popularize sports amongst younger folks, I don't think that they're that great ways of doing that. My mind goes to this one instance, which I read about back in 2020, where a young 15-year-old was on Robinhood, a stock trading app, and first of all, he was underage, mm-hmm. right? I don't think he was allowed to be on that, but for, you know, there's a lot of sort of lax controls, I suppose, on sort of their age restrictions. And he was trading options.
Oh, gosh.
he made a trade, and the trade was actually good. Like he went, I guess, online and learned about this one option trading scheme. He went online and researched this. He made his trade. He actually conducted it properly. However, due to a, I wouldn't say glitch, but just maybe a sort of a time mismatch in just sort of the way that your result shows up on your app, he thought that he lost like $500,000, and he ended up committing suicide. And I don't know, when we don't allow 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds to go to casinos, I think for good reason.
Yeah.
You know, why should we allow them to access casino-esque type of games, you know, dealing with real money, with things that they that they know or they think they should know, like sports, where they can lose significant sums of money. I just think that's a recipe for disaster. I also think that there's just better ways to get kids involved in sports. Or in some ways, maybe you don't even need that, right? Like, it's almost like superfluous. I think like a lot of kids are just gonna enjoy sports, watching sports. I don't know if you need to like add the NFT crypto trading speculation gambling on top of it to get them involved.
But there's no rush like gambling on a game and knowing that, you know, there's, you just have a little extra riding on it. I used to sports gamble a little bit, then I stopped. It was a pandemic kind of thing too as well.
Well, no, it's funny. I mean, I think that a lot of my friends over the past year or so have started to really get into the sports betting.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know, oh yeah, yeah. Like even friends of mine are like, you know, I'd get lunch with them and they'd be like, man, like, I got a lot of money riding on this game tonight. And I'm like, do you even watch this game? And they're like, no, but it's fun. I was like, dude, that's just...
It's fun.
That doesn't sound right to me. Yeah. You know, and now I have friends that are, you know, they never used to head to the racetrack, and now they're at, like, the Belmont Stakes or out to betting on horses. And I think that a lot of it is this popularization of sports betting and other, you know, types of I wouldn't say gambling or betting products that are directly delivered to you in your in the comfort of your own home via your phone on apps. And I think that that's not very healthy.
That's true. Do you think part of it comes from, like, I feel like the pandemic has sapped us of kind of like our traditional like adrenaline or like dopamine rushes. We could travel before and really, you'll spend our money like that way and experience things. It's like, I have a friend who like will like gamble a little bit and does things like that. He's like, yeah, sometimes you just do it because you want to feel something. Do you think that's like a common feeling amongst people who their friends who are like who have just gotten sports betting for you?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's interesting. Okay, now I'm getting really philosophical here.
Yeah.
I think that up until the pandemic, we really medicated ourselves with consumerism. Mm-hmm. And other forms of dopamine rushes, right? Like traveling. Well, you know, it's funny. I think you can think of it in multiple waves, right? I think social media has a lot to do with it. I think social media has really helped disseminate certain types of activities and has really increased the envy factor amongst a lot of young people or users of social media.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of spurred a lot more people to sort of pursue these short-term dopamine rush activities to show off to all their friends or network on social media. So I think social media has really sort of amplified a lot of these quick sort of dopamine rushes and activities that sort of generate that. And I think, you know, to your point, I think it's really interesting because the pandemic put the brakes on that almost entirely, right? You can't go out to fancy restaurants anymore. I guess you could buy stuff still, but, you know, what's the point of buying the Louis Vuitton bag if you can't
show it to your friends.
Show it off at the fancy restaurant. Exactly. Yeah. You know, like you can post as many pictures about it, but there's nothing like taking that watch or that bag out to up to Spago in LA and flaunting it. Right.
Yeah.
So, I think that you're right. I think that the pandemic has kind of put the brakes on a lot of that. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these apps and you know, gambling apps or whatever have kind of filled the void to compensate for that short-term dopamine that we've all been chasing over the past like decade.
No, for sure. I think it's, especially for example with Top Shot, there's nothing kind of like this. I don't know if you collected like any like trading cards when you were a kid, like Pokemon or like Yu-Gi-Oh or even like sports cards, but you know that like feeling when you open it up and you take it out, right?
Yeah, you smell the fresh.
Fresh cardboard.
the fresh card smell.
Yeah, you do it and you look through it and you're just like, oh, did I get it? It's a little bit less fun when you're doing it digitally, but I mean they really kind of like, yeah, they all the bells and whistles are there. You know, you kind of like click through each one and then you find out, and like, there's nothing. Yeah, I think just these like short kind of like dopamine rushes are what kind of like these Top Shot is really trying to take advantage of. And also, since Wall Street Bets, and there's this idea that, and I guess Bitcoin in general, there's this idea that like, oh, you can get instantly rich at any time, like by, and you somehow have some control over that, right? If you just knew more at the time, or if you just kind of like believed in something hard enough, you could get there. I think with like GameStop, that really happened, because it was this idea that, you know, enough people believed in it that they were able to will it to happen. To some extent that is like kind of true, but it's probably more of like a lottery ticket kind of thing than those people would probably, those people might like care to admit. But it feels like there's just so many more ways to kind of like hit the lottery at this point. It just, I guess, kind of like what I feel when I do like get invest in crypto. It's not like, and I don't have like a lot in it, so you don't have to worry about me, Matt. But it's kind of like, oh, I have this like FOMO on these like random investing opportunities that you just don't want to, you just don't want to like miss out on kind of like the next big thing.
Right. Well, you know, I won't be surprised, Jeff, if like next year you got no shirt.
I just need one more.
just front me $5,000, please. I just need to invest in this.
Yeah.
It's gonna be big. I know it. No. I think that you're right. I think that there are, and with social media too, because I think it's so much easier now to advertise the wins. Right. I think that there is a lot of FOMO out there. Whether you're talking about crypto, whether you're talking about stocks, whether you're talking about any sort of, you know, investing or money making opportunity. You know, I see so many advertisements for real estate. Oh, you got to buy a house. Oh, you got to do this. Become a real estate investor. Oh, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think that when you start seeing that, that is an indication that the market is not healthy or that there's a bubble. There's a really interesting story. I don't know whether or not it's actually true, but there was a story that John F. Kennedy's dad, like JFK Sr., I think his name was, he made out like a bandit after the Great Depression. But one of the reasons why he was able to maintain a lot of his wealth and build wealth during the Great Depression was because he sold all of his holdings right before the crash. And there's a story that said that he was getting a shoe shined in New York, or maybe it was Boston, but he was getting a shoe shined, and his shoe shine boy was giving him stock trading tips. And JFK Sr. said that immediately after he got, you know, he had that interaction and got his shoe shined, he went to his broker and he said, sell everything. And he said that the reason why he did that was because he felt that when there was just so much, having just so much exuberance, right? Or just like when stock trading advice is just so widely disseminated, and people are talking about the next get-rich-quick opportunity, that is when he sort of knew that there was too much, you know, market exuberance, and that there was a bubble and the market was overbought and there was going to be a crash very soon. And if you kind of take that story and apply it to today, I think there's a bit of an analog, because I feel like everywhere I go, people are trying to tell me about the next get-rich-quick opportunity. Oh, buy this crypto thing. Oh, you know, there's this new stock that you have to get. Oh, Wall Street Bets says, you know, buy GameStop. Oh, you got to get in. And I think that whenever you hear just so much advice dispensed by people that generally aren't quote-unquote experts, I think you should be very fearful, you know, of what's to come. I think, you know, this is kind of like playing into how Warren Buffett invests, right? He says, be bold when others are fearful, and fearful when others are bold. But if you are fearful when everyone else is fearful, and bold when everyone else is bold, you're going to lose with the rest of the market. So generally, I just, right now, I mean, again, I'm no investment advisor, so don't take my word for it, but I do think that it's not a good time to invest. I think that people should be very guarded about money-making opportunities right now. And I think that, you know, with anything, you never want to... This is funny. Yeah. We started talking about basketball, and now we're getting into, like, money
it's basketball
money
and business.
But I would generally recommend to people that, you know, when, like, never invest when based on a feeling of FOMO. I think that whenever you make an investment, you want to have done your research and feel like you are buying something for the long run, and it doesn't matter whether it's the top of the market or bottom of the market, like it's going to be an investment to grow, and you know that there's growth potential, long-term growth potential in whatever you're buying. You know, just generally, I think that, I don't know, this is just, again, life philosophy leaking in here, but I think that get-rich-quick opportunities are extremely rare. I don't think that most of the rich people in life, I don't think, got their money because they, you know, had some sort of winning lottery ticket. Definitely luck was involved in their rise, but I don't think that they got rich overnight. I think very few people experience that. And I think that anyone who purports to say that if you just buy into this or do this, you'll get rich quick, you know, overnight, I am very inherently suspicious of any of that type of advice. And I think everyone else should be too. So when I was working in Silicon Valley, there were so many people or stories that I had heard of, you know, the mythical Bitcoin, early Bitcoin investor who bought it in 2012 and now is a Bitcoin millionaire, you know, multimillionaire who has quit their job. I never really knew whether or not any of these stories were true. I think that they were extremely over-exaggerated, and I think that many of them, maybe it was like one or two guys, and then that just, you know, the myth just kind of took a life of its own. But they're exceedingly rare, these types of get-rich-quick opportunities. I think that in life, like, there's no shortcuts. And if you want to build your wealth, this goes out to anybody. I mean, it's the same, I think, in the athletic world, right? There's no like sort of shortcuts to becoming a LeBron James, right? The hours that these guys put in to perfect their craft is what makes them great. And I think it's the same with building wealth. You can't just expect that things are going to happen overnight and you'll be able to get rich. So I guess this is a long way of saying that, or an answer to your question, no, I think that fundamentally everyone should be very wary of these sort of get-rich-quick schemes that are being advertised.
You bring up great points. I think being careful about, because if when just I honestly, like, my feeling, and you know, it was kind of like this with the pandemic, because I remember when COVID hit, when the NBA was postponed, I was like, oh shit, this is like a real thing. And like, if it was such like a big thing had to be postponed, then we're going to be in this for the long haul. And that's kind of almost what I thought of when kind of like crypto arrived to the NBA, because that's only then was did I really kind of like try to research it and get to know it a little bit and feel like I have like get some sort of like grasp upon it. And I think that, you know, just because something has been legitimized by kind of like a major institution doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a good thing to do or a safe thing to do, or kind of like it doesn't put it on par, I guess, with your traditional index funds and, you know, ETF kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's a really interesting point that you bring up too, is just the legitimacy that's conferred if a brand name attaches itself to some sort of scheme. I think I think that's how a lot of things get sold in life, right? You know, during the recession, the great financial crisis, all the blue chip banks were pushing these very risky, very dangerous financial products to investors, and they were attaching their, you know, storied reputations and sterling names to these products, and they were a bunch of crap. And so, you know, I would just be very careful about anything. You know, if I was going to give investment advice to anybody, I would say, really do your own research. You know, there's no shortcuts. If you're thinking of investing in anything, I don't think all crypto is bad. I don't think all NFTs are bad. I think that if you are going to deal in any of these products, you need to do your own research and you have to really understand how things work before you put up any of your money. Otherwise, you're going to lose it. And I think that you're seeing a lot of people have been burned by some of these schemes. I mean, there's so many fraudulent crypto schemes out there. And even if the NBA or some other large organization with some sort of sterling reputation attaches their name to it, I don't think that that is any indication that the product or the thing that they're selling is good. So, you know, I mean, if you're going to be a lawyer, read the fine print. Or hire me to read your fine print.
There you go. Make sure to hire Matt in two and a half years or so.
Right.
And yeah. Me, you know, I hope you'll hire me too when I'm like shirtless and, you know, asking for more money to buy an NFT. Thank you, Matt, for coming on. I think we covered a lot of interesting topics. I think it really kind of I think this idea of like whether the NBA has like legitimized cryptocurrency is it was an interesting topic to cover, and just kind of you giving your warnings for the future, I think, also like made me realize, like, yeah, just because the NBA says it's a thing doesn't mean that it should be a thing.
Well, you know, on the other hand, I mean, sorry, like on the other hand, that I think is really interesting is just from a business perspective of the NBA, like the risks involved of attaching their name to something that might be like this speculative thing. Because, you know, we've been talking a lot about the individual participants sort of, or the spectator, the fans' perspective. But on the other hand, you have the NBA and sort of the business implications of attaching their name to this new sort of newfound crypto scheme. And there is a risk there, right? If a bunch of NBA top shot players get burned like badly, you know, that's a really bad look on the NBA, right? Like we attached our name to the league, or the league's name to this game, and all these fans are like losing their shirts off of it, right? Like that's not a great experience. Mm-hmm. And if anything, that would turn people off the sport, I think, right? If you lost your house because of betting on these like speculative NFTs, like you're not going to have a great positive sort of mind association with the NBA going forward, right?
Yeah.
Or LeBron, right? You'll see like or Trae Young, whatever like highlight you got. So I think that's also another interesting aspect too. It's just on the business side of the NBA, like I don't know if it was such a great decision by them to affix their name to some of these schemes if they themselves didn't really vet it fully either.
Yeah, I think there's, and maybe there's even kind of like this, there's now kind of like this divide between like crypto, because like companies, I guess like Coinbase, mainly crypto.com, they're kind of, there's like, they're quote unquote more legitimate. Like maybe like Bitcoin and Ethereum, you know, they're more or less kind of like, they're those kinds of things that have been around for a longer time are potentially kind of like more legitimate and less risky. And I think maybe as it goes towards that angle, like larger, like the NBA feels like, and even like separate teams and stadium owners, they feel comfortable working with those companies. But you don't see like Dogecoin like sponsoring like the NBA, like an NBA team or something like that, or like, right, you know, or things like that. So maybe now, maybe that could be potentially a good thing. You know, now like a person who's interested in crypto will see like these larger names, and that could be like, okay, like let's go with that instead of like, I don't know, like puppy dog coin or like a Dogecoin kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Elon Musk definitely isn't following that advice, but but that's Elon Musk. And that's
I think you make a really solid point the NBA is quote unquote a family product too, right? Basketball is kind of like a family product, and they want to market themselves to all ages, and they can't associate themselves with kind of like these schemes. But maybe now they can with these like larger organizations who, I mean, like crypto.com, if you have the money, then, and if you're able to pay up that large sum, like staple, like, you know, it's been Staples Center for so long, and there's just like a name behind that. And it's also like the Lakers, and the Lakers don't own their stadium. I think it's if another group owns it, but I mean, it probably took a hefty sum to get the naming rights there. And it probably money talks at the end of the day.
Well, from, you know, the crypto business perspective, I think you've identified it completely, right? Like the reason why I think a lot of crypto companies have been purchasing these large, high-profile sports sponsorships is because the crypto industry is looking for greater legitimacy. And when you affix your name to one of these cultural institutions, you are, you know, making that mind association that this is legitimate, right? I mean, I think you said it right there, like we believe that Coinbase or crypto.com is a lot more legit now because they have their name out there. Whether that's the case though, who knows, right? And I think that, you know, it really works for the businesses there to kind of gain legitimacy. So for the crypto industry, you know, I think that's why you're seeing so much more of that pervading sports. But again, like, who knows whether or not investing in crypto is safe, right? Who knows whether or not buying stocks in some of these companies is stay safe, right? We still don't know. And again, I would just recommend that everyone who does consider investing in crypto or buying stock in any of these companies, just make sure that you do your research and you know what you're getting yourself into. Because otherwise, you're liable to lose a lot of money. And that's never fun.
No, it's not. Definitely not fun. Not that I would know. All right, well, thanks again, Matt. This is, it's a great conversation. And, hope to. I know you're starting law school back up pretty soon, in like a couple days, right?
Don't remind me, please.
Okay, well, we hope to have you back on in the summer or something when you're done.
Anytime, Jeff. Always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah.